Good morning, Gavin.
Good morning, Sarah Jane.
How are you this morning from a lockdown London?
Yes, all right. It's been a mild week, but the skies are slate grey and lockdown is getting a little bit wearing. We're into what now? Two of four, so two more to go. But already, talk about what next, and lots of people looking ahead at Christmas and thinking, are we going to be able to see the family or not?
No, it's a grim one, isn't it? I haven't actually. My mother's in Surrey, and I'm just wondering. I hope she's not listening in because I'm now going to out her. But she's. I get the impression that she's a little bit like lockdown for who. But anywho, the WHO warning that there is a tough 6 months ahead for Europe, which of course is the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes, and I'm afraid a terrifying statistic that in Europe one person is dying from the pandemic every 17 seconds in Europe. I know, frightening, isn't it? And what the World Health Organization Europe Director Hans Kluge is saying is that with the continent recording more than 29,000 new COVID deaths last week alone, he said, I'm afraid we're into this a really tough period of some more tight restrictions because the second wave of the pandemic just seems to be really accumulating right throughout October, looking back at the statistics. And that's what we're paying for now. Europe accounts for 28% of global cases and 26% of deaths. He also expressed great concern about Switzerland and France, and that's because intensive care units there are at 95% capacity. Sure. So it won't take a huge increase in the number of cases for them simply to run out of bed and then potentially having to shuffle people many hundreds of kilometers around Europe until they do find a bed. At least Germany is offering up some of its spare capacity because that's being deemed to have dealt with the thing pretty well. But on other matters, as I mentioned, the UK ending its lockdown on the 2nd of December, and we're due to hear tomorrow on the Prime Minister's plans for Christmas. It's widely being suggested he could allow people from different households to mix at Christmas, but the scientists are saying for every day you permit mixing between different households, you will need 5 days of lockdown to get back to square one.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, it's grim. It's grim. Scotland. 2 million people in Scotland have now moved to the highest level, the toughest level of COVID restrictions and legally enforceable travel bans. So those who decide not to adhere to those restrictions could face fines.
Yes. So restrictions remain in place until the 11th of December. But what this partially does is almost say to some people from England, you can't go to Scotland.
Yeah.
And indeed, within Scotland, you can't go in or out of certain areas. Now, plenty of people are saying, hang on a minute, does the Scottish Parliament actually have the powers to do that? So we're expecting to see it tested. That's, of course, if there are enough police to monitor the driving in and out of certain areas. But there's no doubt that in and around Scotland, that belt of area of Scotland between Glasgow and Edinburgh, really, really very high rates of coronavirus. And again, the First Minister of Scotland, the leader there, is suggesting that she too is looking ahead at what can be done at Christmas. But I'm afraid while there might be encouragement for industry leaders saying, look, this lockdown is killing our businesses, and indeed parents saying our children are suffering more at home than they are at school. Plenty of people are asking, well, hang on a minute, is it safe to go back? So the situation in Scotland, I'm afraid, perhaps among the worst in the UK.
This is a story that I can't even imagine how and why this has happened. A man is facing a fine of hundreds of euros for breaking coronavirus rules after reporting a friend's fatal fall in the Alps in Italy. Why? How on earth has he managed to break coronavirus rules for doing that?
Well, they were out running. Under the laws that are local in Italy's northern Lombardy region, that is a red zone, which means people are banned from travelling between areas. Now, the two runners had come from one province, about 10 kilometres to the north, when the accident happened and were in a different municipality. Now, when the terrible accident happened. One of the runners, a 34-year-old, fell 200 metres from a ridge on a mountain while running. And so the other one thought, crikey, I'll call the emergency services, which he did. A mounted rescue helicopter recovered his body, but sadly he was already dead. And then the authorities said, hang on a minute, what were you doing running? Running between these red zone areas, which are against the law. So, yes, unbelievably, amid all the grief that he's suffering, he could now face a fine of hundreds of euros, having done the decent thing and calling in the accident that befell his friend. But plenty of people are saying these restrictions in Italy are there for a purpose, and consequently, although rather unpleasant and difficult, he should actually face this fine because he was quite clearly breaking the lockdown.
Oh, dear. I mean, the term Jobsworth comes to mind. Something rather unpleasant afoot going on in a park in northern Berlin, Gavin.
Yes, I'll try and keep this one as vague as possible, I'm afraid, Sarah-Jane, because forensic experts are currently determining bones that have been discovered in a park in northern Berlin, and those bones are human. And it is said to be the remains of a 44-year-old man who went missing 2 months ago. Now, thankfully, I don't bring you every murder or every police investigation.
No.
Otherwise, we would be here all day. But this one is rather special because police believe it was a sexually motivated murder and cannibalism.
Oy vey.
In other words, human eating human. So they're only naming the suspected killer as Stefan R, saying that he had visited relevant internet chat rooms. And now they say they won't give out his surname, and that is apparently quite a regular occurrence. He is believed to be a 41-year-old maths teacher, and it was people strolling around the park who actually found the bone. So they're saying that one bone was totally devoid of flesh, and there were other indications which make us strongly suspect he was the victim of a cannibal. Oh dear, watch this space.
That reminds me, and again, I won't go into it too much, but I seem to remember also in, oh no, it wasn't, I think it was Germany, there was a chap who ended up in jail after meeting somebody on advertising, put in an ad, as you do, on the Craigslist or whatever. He wanted to kill and eat somebody, and somebody responded and said, yeah, you can kill and eat me, and he did, and he's now, quite rightly, in jail. Oh, extraordinary. What's going on in Berlin? Why? Why is this happening? Let's move swiftly on. And from 2030, new cars and vans powered exclusively by petrol and diesel aren't going to be sold in the UK. So what then? We've all got to drive around in electric vehicles. What's the deal here?
That's exactly what the government's trying to force us into, a green industrial revolution.
Right.
Now, the plan allocated some 80 billion South African rand for the scale of this challenge. The government really is keen for this environmental agenda to create jobs in industries like nuclear power. Now, you might think, hang on, that's not very environmental. But, of course, it is carbon-free, and that is why that's thought to be a good move. Won't increase the carbon footprint of the UK. But also other packages of funding coming out for different projects around the UK to try and boost clean energy, but also to try and cut down on the so-called dirty fuels. And I'm afraid that will mean, yes, new cars and vans that are just petrol or diesel will no longer be legally be sold after 2030. Now, there are plenty saying, well, hang on a minute. You know, I look at the cost of an electric car, and it is a lot more than a conventional car. So big questions about how people are going to be able to afford that, and big questions about where they're going to charge these cars. Because at the moment, there aren't that many charging points.
No, there's not. Oh, well, although that said, you know, here it might be different. But, I mean, the UK has an enormous second-hand car market. So, if I was still living there, I wouldn't be panicking just yet. It's not going to force me into an electric car quite yet. I can still probably get hold of a maxi. My dad used to have a maxi. Oh, dear, that was embarrassing. Right. It sounds like the plot of a Hollywood movie, but three people arrested over this dramatic diamond heist in Germany last year, which targeted one of Europe's biggest treasure collections.
Yes, housing in one of the world's oldest museums, because it was Augustus the Strong. Isn't that a great
name? Oh, yeah, fabulous. Yeah, I know him well,
I think Sarah Jane was strong. anyway, it was Saxony's ruler who created the collection in 1723. said, as you said, to be perhaps the biggest and best collection of diamond-encrusted items from around the world. It's in the Dresden Green Vault, so in Dresden in the east of Germany. Yes, I'm afraid some, I tried to get some experts to put a value on what had been stolen. And some said, quite simply, it is beyond price. It is beyond monetary value, these items. So that's how valuable they were. And they were taken in this raid, and then police set about a series of raids across several German states, 1,600 police officers involved. We do now believe that these three are members of a notorious criminal family network based in Berlin again. Basically, they are hoping, the authorities are hoping, that they will be able to retrieve all or some of those that have been lost. But the actual way in which they got in to the Dresden Green Vault is truly something like Mission Impossible. They managed to partially cut the power to the building, disable the alarm system, set fire to a nearby electrical junction box, and then managed to sort of get in, evading all the different securities there. So it is a truly amazing Hollywood sort of blockbuster-style story.
Extraordinary stuff. I love this next story, which is about the Vatican. A rather embarrassing week for the Vatican after it emerged that the Pope's official Instagram account had liked a photo of a scantily clad Brazilian model. I love it.
Even worse, I'm afraid that Brazilian model, Natalia Jacopotto, was dressed up as a schoolgirl in a school uniform outfit.
Oh, dear.
So perhaps even less appropriate to be liked by the pontiff. Of course, let's not suggest it was he himself.
No, never, never.
Of course, he's a staff of people who do these things. But anyway, when it was pointed out and first was reported in the media, the image was immediately unliked on the platform. So now an investigation is underway to find out how it could have happened. Suffice to say, I'm sure the person who liked it either as a joke or accidentally or genuinely thought, well, I quite like that, so we'll tick the box. Well, I'm sure that person is feeling rather sweaty this weekend, fearing they might be caught.
Imagine being that person. Oh, dear. I've been asking all morning for people's thoughts on what they believe to now be the three most expensive cities in the world. Please put us out of our misery, Gavin. Which three have made the top three?
Yeah, perhaps they won't be a surprise, and I heard some of them correct. Hong Kong,
yep.
Zurich, and Paris, and Singapore and Osaka. Now, they were equal first with Hong Kong last year. They slipped down the rankings. But let me just say again, Hong Kong, Zurich and Paris, 1, 2, 3. Most Chinese cities have risen rapidly in this survey because of U.S.-China tensions that have pushed up prices. But Singapore's prices fell because of an exodus of foreign workers due to the pandemic. And, of course, less demand, a reduction in that. Bangkok slipped 20 places, is now ranked 46th most expensive. It's interesting to see how this goes around and comes around. Some others, London, 20th.
Right.
Manchester, joint 46th. That's gone up 5 places.
Manchester.
Now, where are the cheapest places to live?
Yeah.
Here we go. I'll do the cheapest first, getting slightly more expensive. Damascus in Syria, Tashkent in Uzbekistan, Lusaka in Zambia is the third or fourth cheapest, I think. Caracas, Venezuela, those are the cheapest cities in which to live. It's all basically done by a basket of goods, comparing 138 goods and services. Seeing where they come out. Yeah, logistical challenges also affect prices, of course, where shortages of goods such as toilet roll and pasta can fuel price rises in some cities in some categories.
Speaking of a shortage of things, we've had a thing here, Gavin, which I'd sort of heard on the wires and then saw for myself. Shortage of Marmite, something to do with the yeast.
Now, I'd not heard that, but you know, these things which have a long shelf life during the pandemic, of course, all of a sudden become a bit like gold dust. So that would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, yeah, Marmite. And the other interesting, well, I say it's interesting, you'll be the judge of that. When I moved into my house last year, I bought myself a small thing of Marmite. And I thought, I wonder how long, because there always seems to be Marmite in the cupboard. It seems to be that it's like a Mary Poppins handbag. There's no bottom to it. Well, would you believe, Gavin, I swear this is absolutely true, a year to the day that I moved into the house was the day that I finished the last scraping of Marmite in that jar. Takes a year. It takes a year to finish a small pot of Marmite. And on that note, sir, I'm going to leave you.
You don't need much of Marmite to taste it, that's for sure.